This is the Donnan and Dane podcast from UGASports.com. I'm Dane Young. I'm a video analyst and commentator and podcast host and whatever else Roddy and Jake and the rest of the crew at UGA Sports wants me to be. You know Jim Donnan on the other end of the line, College Football Hall of Famer, former Georgia head coach. Jim, how you doing?
Doing great. Looking forward to another day of talking to somebody besides looking at TV. I'm looking forward to talking to you. You're about the only guy I talk to.
Well, I hope that's a good conversation. I know it is for me. We do have some news this week, though, Coach, as the NCAA has given the okay for schools to move ahead with voluntary workouts. Now then, that moves on to each individual conference. It is anticipated that the SEC will also approve it and making it where players can come back to campus and work out in some capacity. Some details have to be worked out, but just overall, what's your reaction to the news that voluntary workouts are probably pretty close to happening?
Well, I'm certainly excited about it just from the standpoint of these young men. I'm sure they're been through a very difficult time and adjustment, just like all of us, with the situation we've been presented with. But at the same time, the safety that's involved concerns me. There's not a whole lot you can do except prepare for it. And we've got the best in the business in Ron Corson, who signifies how good he's the stead he's revered in the conference, and the fact that they had all these doctors and other people on this board, but he's the only trainer on it that have 14 schools represented, and he's setting up these safety precautions. So I'm sure we'll have a good plan in place to take care of these kids. And the one thing that I would say safety wise, they're going to be a lot more in a sanitary environment that's really regulated in our weight room than they would be on a campus weight room or a weight facility around the country. You know that there's going to be highly monitored, and I'm sure that because it's voluntary, our strength coach, Scott Sinclair, and his staff can't actually be there standing beside them and putting them through the grind, but they can be available from a safety perspective there. So I'm sure they'll be watching them and guiding them and giving them a good workout to utilize.
And we had the reporting from Roddy Nabulsi that it's likely that players will be in smaller groups than they normally would be. Just from an overall standpoint, what happens in these voluntary workouts? Kind of take us into those weight rooms of what that looks like.
Well, I think what Roddy was referring to, and it was good, I mean, you're looking at the state regulations for distancing and also groups, and it's based on the square footage in a facility. So in this case, we can have, groups of three, maybe six groups of three in there at one time, 18 people, and then rotate around. I'm sure they'll give them some kind of schedule when so-and-so shows up, just so they can make sure they've been tested. Also make sure that you don't have guys trying to come in there and they can't get in because somebody else is in there. So it'll be voluntary, but I'm sure they'll give them times where certain groups can lift. I would think, obviously the O-line together, the D-line together and like that, because they're using similar weight the amount of weight on there. You don't want to put a couple of wide receivers in there with a couple of D-linemen where, they're always having to switch the weights off, the plates off there. And I'm sure that's a safety value, too. I'm sure they'll have on masks and gloves and all that. But it'll be highly regulated. And from my perspective, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but everybody's got to realize that our kids have been on such a high strain and work ethic and 24/7 almost year round. They get to go home between May semester and summer school, but these kids have been on a really strict conditioning, nutrition, physical testing, everything since they were enrolled in school. And now we don't know what they've been doing. They've certainly had workouts and everything, but facilities are not what they are over at our place. So there's going to be a little bit of adjustment just seeing where a guy is now and where he was and where you want him to be. And the number one thing you want them to do is hopefully retain the gains that they made over the year, or if they lost some, maybe get them back, but not be so worried about developing anything as much as just getting your conditioning in, and also making sure soft tissue is ready to go and be ready to practice. And starting in June as compared to July 15th is pennies from heaven as far as I'm concerned, because I think 6 weeks of really good work in there will help them. And from what I understand, hopefully that the whole group can come together in an organized fashion on July the 1st. Then they can maybe keep them over in a very good setting there. And everybody would be here, including the walk-ons and for next year, the incoming freshmen for next year, everybody would be here. So that'll be good. One point that I thought was really good, the NSA is going to let them continue to do, which I know our staff and some of the people that I've talked to around the country, they're going to continue to have the virtual Zoom meetings and give them 8 hours a week. So anything that they've worked on and did very well on as far as learning the offense and defense and special teams, they're going to continue to work on that like they would if they were here this summer. So fashion the fact that if they were in summer school June 1st, they would be installing some things and meeting and doing that along with their conditioning. The only difference is this won't be an organized conditioning program as far as coaches involved and all that. The coaches will have to be off to the side and won't be around them. Whereas if they were here and it was a legal situation, the coaches could take those 8 hours and be involved a little bit. And you couldn't use a ball or anything, but you could work on conditioning and drills that are specific related to their position. So we're losing a little bit there, but compared to what I thought 4 or 5 weeks ago, we were looking, hey, was the season going to be postponed? Were you not going to be able to get here to August? But from a safety value, this is going to be good for these kids to have at least 4 weeks before it becomes a non-voluntary situation.
So with coaches having to be hands-off until it's a team-sanctioned deal, what information can Kirby Smart and the position coaches get from voluntary workouts? What can they glean from this?
Well, I think that certainly the players can communicate with the coaches, you know, over the phone or FaceTime or on their computers or whatever it might be. They have this one of the things they have is this group meetings app where Kirby can text all of them at once, you know, and tell them what's getting ready to happen and all that. But I think the main thing is just some feedback. Look, I haven't been able to do the squats like I wanted to, couldn't get enough weight. I need to do this. What can I do to help on my quickness and all that? And, you know, that's all part of, they just can't go out and regulate it. They can certainly give them a program to work on, and they will be able to do it. And then they can give them feedback through their phone or through a computer and, you know, put down what they did and how they're doing it and then monitor it.
You know, Coach, one of the underrated aspects of all this, because I think people focus on the physical nature of the players' bodies and how they're going to be conditioned for what's coming next. But to me, it's just massive to get players in a same room together, even if it's not a lot of them at one time. But they have to build that cohesion that happens typically in the spring and that got pulled out from under them. But the teamwork starts immediately. How big of an impact is that? Just kind of the camaraderie that happens among guys in a weight room.
Well, whatever you can pull out your Rogier's Thesaurus and come up with a word for fantastic, huge, whatever it might be, that's what it is. Because I've always felt that you build your team and you build your oneness and togetherness by seeing how a guy worked through adversity. And, you know, I've always said adversity causes some people to break, others to break records. So, and that's not my quote. I don't know who made it, but it's a good one from the standpoint. If you're out there working out with somebody and this guy's cutting corners and not doing what he needs to do, you know it, he knows it, everybody knows it. And what you do when you're by yourself, you can get by with some of that. But all of a sudden you're in there with your other teammates and they're not going to let you do that, particularly the leaders and the guys that know what's at stake here. And I've always said here throughout this crisis that whichever teams handle this adversity the best, and, you know, whatever they do to regulate their team and get them back, you can't use excuse. Well, we didn't have spring practice. We didn't have this. Hey, everybody's on the same level here, except maybe a few of the teams that got some practices in. But the main point is you got to really get your team to within the groups itself. You know, you just don't go on an offensive bus and a defensive bus. Everybody goes on those buses, but once you get on the field, it's a team effort. And that teamwork and that unity is something I really feel like Coach Smart has done a terrific job, along with his assistants and with the strength staff, of building that harmony. And it's pretty obvious that our players love to play with each other. You see, like, they enjoy playing. You play football. You know, it's not a job, it's not work. It's hard work in a lot of ways, but there's nothing like playing together and winning together. And, you know, you suffer together when you lose. But as far as what the statement you made, this is invaluable, getting your team back together. And it's like being away from your family, so to speak. These guys build a lot of relationships, and they believe in each other, and they enjoy being around there. As you know, going to college, you build friendships, and you know, all of a sudden you're separated from them, and it's been a very difficult situation. So I think just seeing each other is going to be worth a lot. Then everybody's going to get back together quick. And the last thing is just the encouragement you get from your bros. You got the other guy there pushing you and encouraging you, and knowing that you're fighting for the same goals as compared to whether you're at home trying to figure out, how am I going to be able to compete with this other guy when he's got a gym to work out in and I don't, you know? So I think that competition's going to help too.
And you think of some of these older guys, Richard LeCount or Malik Herring or Justin Schaefer, you know they're going to be jacked up because they don't have, you know, years left in Athens. This is, to use the Michael Jordan, this is their last dance. And so regardless if it got off to a shaky start, they're going to make the most of it. And that's going to start with the voluntary workouts.
That's really a good point too, Dane, because I think the thing that all of us recognize and so many things that we've taken for granted all over our lives and is what we've been missing here. I know everybody's going to feel a lot better about, hey, things weren't quite as bad as we thought they were, man. Look, we got a lot to be thankful for, and we're going to take it. You know, sometimes you need that kind of jolt. Unfortunately, this is a horrific jolt with a loss of lives and many people that have been sick. But you need the stunning reality, Bill, and this is certainly one where, look, you're fortunate to be able to play. You're fortunate enough to be on a team, and particularly to be on a team like the University of Georgia.
And, Coach, you know I love learning football from you, just kind of the inner workings of it, because you've been in rooms that I've never been in and I'll likely never be in. So I'm curious, with the extra time that coaches have had, I know there's been some extra scouting done for opponents, or maybe even rethinking how some of that is done. What's the status of summer scouting reports for Georgia in terms of looking ahead to future opponents?
You know, that's one of the things that I feel like knowing Kirby and knowing our staff, that we do such a terrific job of utilizing these analysts, but also the coaches themselves as far as studying your future opponents. You know, you're always going to have the same conference opponents and your crossover opponent, but sometimes you're going to have a different SEC opponent or a non-conference like we play in Virginia. So the thing that you'll do is they'll do a complete breakdown on all of Virginia's games and probably some of the games prior to this year to get a feel for them. But in the interim period that we've had between when we stopped spring and now, there's been a velocity of info that you probably would never be able to ascertain because you got so much downtime there, you know, even though they have been meeting with players and all that. So I really feel like they've had a good chance to study these teams. And what we used to do, and I'm sure these guys do, each coach was assigned a different team in the off season that he was kind of the authority on. And you might be every year you've got Tennessee, or every year you've got on the offensive side, you know, the offensive coach would scout their defense and vice versa. And you would look at it all and make notes and everything when you're in a relaxed atmosphere. And then when you get ready to play the game that week, you've got all that stuff and you look at what they've done for the season that you're playing. But the main point is just a complete breakdown of their personnel, their style, who's had success against them, what they've had trouble with, all those things, which anybody that's listening to this could figure that out. It's just a point that you really go into nth detail as far as breaking down some things. And I'm going to give you a couple examples here of the summer scouting report that really made the difference for us and for me in coaching, and it cost us in another situation. When I was in Missouri, we were going to play Mississippi State, and they were running the Emory Ballard was there, and they were running the Wishbone. And this was before I coached at the University of Oklahoma and really learned how to run it. But one of the things our coach did was the offensive coach obviously would be breaking down the other team's defense and like that. But then he would make you take 3 days, and then whichever team you had, he wanted you to watch their offensive personnel and the defensive coach to watch their defensive coach's personnel, defensive team, so it might pick up something there. Not so much their tendencies, but just look at their personnel. So just to make sure everybody understands, instead of me looking at Mississippi State's defense those 3 days, I was, as an offensive coordinator, I was looking at their offensive personnel, not to scout them on tendencies, but to look at them. And I noticed that their fullback in the Wishbone, every time he was going inside, he had they did a 4-point stance. So they had both their hands forward, and they were, you know, to take off very quickly, kind of like you see some D linemen. He had a lot of weight forward, but when he was going outside to help to the outside, he really was hunched back on his haunches there, and had not very much weight on his hands. So I started studying that, and over 2 years, it held up 100% every tape I looked at. So I went into Bull Reese, who was the defensive coordinator, and I said, hey, I don't have a lot of things here, but I promise you this, if they're going inside, this guy's got looks like he's got everything on a sprinter stance, and if he's going outside, he's backed up. He said, we played him the fourth game, and I said, hey, watch and see if he does it the first three. So we're playing in Jackson, Mississippi, national televised game. And the reason I'm thinking about this is Pepper Rogers, who was a great coach and player and everything, was on TV, and he was during the game. And I just saw where he passed away, unfortunately, last week. And I thought about Pepper Rogers calling our game and what happened. Well, anyhow, we made a call, our line on defense, when it made an animal call. So they could say dog, cat, fish, anything. That meant that they were going to go inside, and we pinched. The tackles came down from four eyes, and the defensive ends came down. And we had everybody but our managers and trainers coming to the inside. And then when they didn't call dog or cat or something, then they just slanted outside. And we had such unbelievable containment on them. It was unbelievable. So anyhow, we just stoned them. We won the game 14 to, I think they might have intercepted a pass and got an easy score, but they had a great linebacker, Johnny Cooks, in the middle, 4-3 defense. But we ended up beating them there. And after the game, one of their players said, God, they looked like they knew what our plays were every down. And we didn't say anything about it. And as fate would have it, last year, I was playing tennis out here at the Athens Country Club in one of these team games, and where we played another club or something, I don't know. But this guy on another team came up to him. He said, "Coach," he said, "were you coaching in Missouri when Missouri played Mississippi State?" And I said, "Sure, I was there in 1983 or 84. He said, "Well, I played on that team." Said, I was a defensive player. He said, "I've never seen anybody stop the wishbone like you guys did. What was it?" And I said, "It all came down to an animal call, man. We had the animal call, and it worked 100%. It was the best thing it ever did as far as pure scouting." And then the other thing that hit us the other way is we were playing Texas. We didn't play Texas, but every 10 years at Missouri, but, you know, at Oklahoma, played them every year. But we had a center who, Brad Edelman, was a tremendous football player, played in the NFL for like 12, 15 years. Just an outstanding player, great, great guy, and just a dominant center. And we had a GA on our staff, Fred Lighting, I think his name was, that had a brother that played for Missouri. And Fred left after that year, and then he went on and did something else. But he told his brother to watch out for Brad, because when Brad had both hands on the ball, it was a running play. And then when it was a play action pass play, obviously when it was down in distance for a pass, he would put it one hand, but he would take his hand off the ball right before, you know, right as the quarterback was coming up to call the snap, and for play action pass. So we noticed in the second quarter, I was in the press box offense. I noticed that the middle linebacker, every time we come to the line and have a pass, he would have his hand behind him and doing a little signal, you know, like move over or something like that. And then the defensive backs would move back. And they had an unbelievable key on us, and fortunately, we figured it out there at halftime. And we came back, and we almost beat them. But, you know, they just stoned us. I mean, they were playing. Those free safeties were up there at the line of scrimmage on the run and playing back on play action. You know, play action is hard to stop, you know, when you fake. But those are two kind of interesting things on summer scouting.
You get those little ticks that reveal what's going on. I have to feel like it's become more complex now, right, with as many cameras that are out there, that coaches have to be a little bit more there aren't animal calls going on that dictate, wouldn't think.
Yeah, there's a lot more intense scrutiny on it with all these analysts studying you and all that. They watch everything you do. And, you know, you look for tips on a defensive back. Does he – when he's going to skate back quickly, or what we call bail, what does he do with his back foot or his inside foot? Because a lot of times people come up disguised and play, you know, like they're going to press you, and then they'll bail out. But they might have a key indicator there that helps you. And then I know, like when I was playing quarterback at at NC State, one thing about Southern Miss's defense, when I looked over there at those linebackers, I never saw any teeth in any of them. I looked over at every one of those guys, and they were smiling at me, so I knew they were tough hombres. Most of them had their teeth knocked out.
How far down the rabbit hole does some of the scouting go? Like, if there's an opponent that's going to have a new offensive coordinator, you're obviously going to view his new team's personnel.
Yeah, that's a good question there. Yeah, you always go back and look at his history, and I know in the Virginia situation, I'm sure they're going to study this transfer quarterback from Mississippi State's going up there as a graduate transfer. So they'll study a lot of him at Mississippi State, because he's going to have a chance to be their starter. I don't know if he will be or not, but you know, you got to always be looking at stuff like that. And picking these guys are on Twitter all the time. They got these people looking for anything that comes up on Twitter about graduate transfers or people that have transferred to teams. But you know, it comes down to blocking and tackling, no question about it. But any kind of little tips that give you an advantage, you definitely want to take it, you know, be ready to use them. And there's nothing wrong with that, you know. People talk about studying their signals and things like that. I mean, you got to always be careful about the signals. I mean, people are going to try to steal your signals. I mean, we saw what happened in pro baseball, but that's a way of life for most graduate assistants. Are up there trying to steal your your signal. That's part of their deal. So they work hard on it.
I don't want to say it's going to be easier, but just the way the schedule sets up for Georgia, I'd like to think that there is an extra degree of familiarity coming on the schedule, in the sense that the cross-division opponent is Alabama, which Georgia has obviously faced many times in recent years. But then against South Carolina, it's Mike Bobo in offense that a lot of people around Georgia, you know, this current staff, they weren't with Bobo in Athens, but they played against him when it was Alabama and Georgia, in a lot of cases with Kirby Smart. So I feel like there's at least some extra degree of there'll be gamesmanship, I'm sure, and some changes that happen. But all these guys know each other, right?
Yeah, and the one thing that I used to say on some of these podcasts with Roddy over there when we did the visual one is that sometimes you know too much about a guy. You know, like Jim Chaney went to Tennessee, and you're thinking, well, you know, Chaney knows we do this, and vice versa. We better be careful. Hey, you can't get too caught up in that, because you drive yourself nuts, because he's been around you for 3 years. But it's certainly an advantage having practice against these guys and seeing what they do. And, you know, I think in Bobo's case, playing Florida, he'll have a good feel for going against Grantham, and because
that's a good point.
Scrimmage against him every week there for several years. And the same thing with Pruitt, being on our staff here when he was offensive coordinator, Pruitt was defensive coordinator. So those things help you. But the biggest thing is just having your team prepared and not beating yourself. And that's something it's going to be really critical here early. You know, maybe some of these younger players that you don't know how they're going to really respond because you didn't see what they were able to do in a spring game in front of a lot of people, and you're counting on them. So it's going to be, for us, going to be a quick start there, going against a good Virginia team. You know, when the ACC division they were in, they got kind of destroyed by Clemson and beaten handily by Florida. But, you know, certainly Bronco Mendenhall is a good coach, and I'm sure he'll have his team ready. And then first road game going to play Alabama, a team picked in the top three, you know, that's certainly going to be a real test.
So is it binders for each individual opponent? I mean, it may be more digitized by this point, but I mean, just how much information are we talking is documented about these teams?
Hey, it's Encyclopedia Britannica. I mean, you got nowadays it's so computerized and everything, but, you know, you still got gobs of stuff. But the biggest thing is to be able to put it all on the different kind of systems that you have, where you can get the tape breakdown, where you have down and distance, field zone, all that stuff. And then you can just look at certain deals, like work on red zone, look at their red zone, they're coming out, their short yardage, your goal line, and all that. But I know back when I was coaching, first started coaching, man, I thought it was going to be great being the coach. And that first summer, we had 2 weeks of vacation, and my head coach made me take all this 16-millimeter film with me and a projector. And I had to break down North Carolina the whole time. So we were going out on the beach, and then some of our friends, Mary's friends and ours, were getting ready to go out to eat. And they said, well, how long? I said, I can't go long. I got to go break down this Carolina. And it was tough. Now, you just watch the film, and then you got to write it down and draw it up and all that. I mean, you learn a lot about it. It taught me a lot, but that wasn't much fun for me.
One final point on all this, with Todd Monken being new to the SEC, and I know he's coached college football, and I know he has relationships with some of the coaches in the SEC too, but you got to think he'll be relying on a lot of the analysts to say, all right, this is the tendency of this defense, so he can kind of know where to attack things offensively.
Exactly, and what you do is, which Kirby does a great job of, on Sunday when they come in there, they'll have the analysts get up and present in-depth scouting report on their tendencies and all that, also their personnel. So before you look at a team, you've got something to really start checking out before you even just put it on their cold. You know, you've had an in-depth evaluation of what they do, so it'll help you, you know, save a little time. And then you, we segment practices like different days are devoted for different things. Like, you know, Tuesday and Wednesday might be a little bit more of the middle of the field and things like that, and goal line. And then Thursday might be situations and short yardage. So, you know, we just don't do the whole practice of trying to do everything so our players can really focus in on the tape they study before they go to practice, that that's what they're going to work on that day. But those binders of info were really good to have. And we used to have what we call and just a great word for it, because the best book ever printed or made was called the Bible at Oklahoma. And in that Bible, we had a list of all the things that gave us trouble on the wishbone, because we never knew what a team was going to play against us very often, because not many other teams played the wishbone, you know, ran the wishbone. So you didn't have film to study, but we had a list of what to go to, so you just didn't really have to rely on rote memory. So it's categorized. If they played triple stack to the field or stack to the field and boundary corner inside, this is what we're going to do. If they play overloaded front with an eagle weak, we're going to do this. If they play a 4-3 with a free safety and playing in a trail position, we're going to do this. Because you had to be ready to get to it, because they had so many teams would get out of their base defense to run against you, that you need to get to that Bible pretty quick and get to the first verse and get after them.
You know, it kind of reminds me of on scripted TV shows, they have what they call a show Bible. And any little detail about a character that they write in as they're developing the show, they make sure to document it in that show Bible. So if they refer to something later on, or they try to identify, well, have we said this before about this character, they kind of can go back to that show Bible and say, this is what we've done before, and then project what they're going to do later. So having that documented is just so crucial to make sure you're going to have success in the future.
Hey, they've been talking to Barry Switzer.
Maybe so.
It was good though. I enjoyed, and every summer we would redefine it and go over it. I know I have it in here in my office down here, and I like to look at it sometime. And it's just, we knew what, I mean, pretty much you knew what you're going to, but occasionally there'd be something like, we played against Southern Methodist in a big game. I mean, we were getting ready to go play for the national championship if we won it. And they came on the goal line and played 11 guys, you know, coming after you. They didn't care wow. about pass or anything. They were just every man for himself. The name we came up, we called it, and people that have watched the watch along show, we call it Butcher Knife Bandit. Mm-hmm. I mean, they get in that butcher knife and they're going to try to cut your throat, and then their two outside guys are going to bandit you, and they're coming hell bent for election. And so we had to come up with something during the game. We'd never seen it. I mean, they stoned us the first couple of times down the goal line, because they had extra guy on the pitch, they had extra guy on the fullback, and an extra guy on the quarterback. So we had to come up with a little scheme on it. But second half, we got after him.
I'm glad you mentioned the watch-along show, because that's something for our audience to have in their minds, that whether you're in the stadium or whether you're not, and whether you're allowed to be there or whether you're not, we are planning to have our watch-along shows for football season, where on the UGA Sports YouTube channel, you can watch, you can have us as your commentary while you're watching the game. So if you want to hear Coach Dunn's live commentary on Georgia football, we bring that to you.
I would say this, that we're probably going to have a few more people watching us this year that like to be in Sanford Stadium, unless we get some kind of miracle vaccine. I mean, this social distancing situation, but I hope we get as many can go to the game as possible. But if they can't, I really feel like we can take this to another level. I mean, I'll actually do a little bit more homework than I've done before, because I'll need to, because I won't be able to have the benefit of going over there, I don't think, right now. But I'm telling you that we had a lot of good reports on it, not just because of me, but you and Roddy and Brent Rollins. I thought we had a pretty good show, and certainly had a lot of people watching it.
We'll have to bring in some halftime guests on FaceTime for the camera and talk to some.
Yeah, maybe
players.
We can do that. I'll get Switzer and Parcells and some of those guys come on at halftime, give us a little bit of stuff.
That'd be great. Well, you know, one thing that everyone's looking forward to, because you can't have the first game until you have the first day of practice. And I know I've seen the tweets from Georgia players saying they're ready to get back to Athens, they're ready to get on a field, and we don't know when that's going to happen yet. But when it does, that's just going to be a day of celebration, the first day of football practice in the fall. Do you have any good first day of practice stories?
Yeah, well, the best one from a non-Georgian was at Marshall, and then I'll come to Georgia. But up at Marshall, our first year, you know, we were trying to do everything we could to get some toughness on our team, and we had this run we were going to do, you know, to around the track for conditioning, and they had to run, the linemen had to run it in a certain amount, and then the backs and the linebackers. And we had this one kid, Donahue Stevenson, who was a great kid. I mean, but he was kind of a BSer too. I mean, he tried to get away with stuff. So he came back, and I could tell before we even started that this test that he wasn't going to make two laps. I mean, the guy just looked out of shape. He's from Miami. And I told the trainer, I said, "Look, you know, Donahue looks bad there." He said, "I know it." Well, he goes around one time, and then these other guys are distant, and he just collapses on the track. And I'm not making fun of the guy. I mean, certainly we went right up there and started looking at him and everything. And the doc and the trainer said, "Look, we probably need to take him in." And I said, "Hey, take him." And just so happened, there was a medical unit that right across the street that had an ambulance, and they came over there and they put him in there, and Donnie was smiling and doing all this stuff. And he needed an ambulance about like I needed one, you know. But he got in the dang ambulance after one running one lap, and our players were busting him so bad. It was such a good morale thing. It scared us to death, but it was such a morale thing. Our trainer was putting him in an ambulance, and all he needed to do is work his ass out a little bit and get in shape. But we had Donahue in the ambulance, but he ended up being okay, and he had a great year for us. And then down here, you know, you have still the first day where the freshmen and their parents come in, and this is a harrowing situation. You know, kids are leaving and all, and you go in there and you talk to the freshmen parents, and even the walk-on parents are in there. So I'm in there giving them a spiel about, you know, we're going to do academically and all these different things, and explaining to them about how they get tickets, you know, about how those are dispersed and everything. So after it's over with, this one guy comes up to me and he said, "Hey, I'm Joe so-and-so, and my son's so-and-so." I said, "Yeah." I said, "We're looking forward to him. You know, he was an offensive lineman. It's going to be a walk-on." He said, "Coach, I just want to tell you something seriously." So I've been working with Johnny. I said, "That's good. I hope he's in good shape." He said, "No, I don't want to talk about that. I've been working with him in the backyard, and I really think that he could be a quarterback." And I'm saying, "Really?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Boy, he's really throwing that ball good and everything like that." And I said, "Well, you know, we're in pretty good shape at quarterback, but I'll look at him when we go out there." And after it was over, I went in there and told Selfo, our line coach, and then the kid was a good kid and everything. He's going to have a hard time even making our team as a lineman. But that was a first day story that I'll never forget. The guy wanted to be a dang. We've been working in the backyard, and I think he could probably play quarterback for you.
I'm glad you didn't need an emergency quarterback.
Yeah, we didn't need one, that's for sure. But, you know, the biggest thing is it's such an indoctrination for those kids. And we're back to where it used to be. You know, the last 5 or 6 years, these freshmen, they come in here in June, and they've worked all summer with you, and they're ready to go. But now – the first time they're going to be here, from what I understand, is July 1st. And it's going to be kind of a shock for them, you know, to get into this regimen because they hadn't had a chance to do it. So sooner the better. But as a lot of people talked about, we all can't wait and looking forward to it.
When you think of some of these freshmen that are not from the southeast part of the United States, and maybe it's their first encounter with the southern humidity that time of year, saw that with Isaiah Wilson. And so that's going to be, I mean, in the middle of July, I mean, that's going to be a quick awakening.
Yeah, that's for sure. For sure.
Well, Coach, always appreciate doing this, and we'll plan to do it again next week. I know at some point in the future you'll be returning to Classic City Eats with Roddy and Jake
Oh,
and doing the show
ready
there.
to do that. I'm glad they're opening back up too. I'm glad Josh got it going again. That'll be great.
Yeah, and Roddy said it looks spectacular in there. I know they're keeping it clean. I know they've got great fried chicken as they always do, but he said they've done some really cool renovations with their time off. So I'm excited to see it as well, and excited to do another Donnan and Dane show with you next week, Coach.
Yeah, and anybody's got anything they want us to talk about, be sure to check in with you and maybe we can hit it. And appreciate everybody listening.